After the service, light refreshments will be served in the community room to your right. Please join us. If you need a quiet place but want to hear the service, you are welcome to go to the East Room, out the door and that way, where there are speakers and you can hear what's going on in here. News of the week's events can be found in our weekly e-blast. Before our service begins, let you know that please hold any applause until the end of the service. The folks up here would be greatly appreciative if you would do that. Before our service begins, please turn to those sitting near you and welcome one another to this beloved community. Before our service begins, please turn off your cell phone as we enter into this time of reflection and celebration. Welcome again to this place of love and hope.
This is our earth. It falls through heaven like a pearl in a glass of plum wine. There are no other earths that I know of. There are no other skies that we have mapped. This is our earth. The oneness who gave birth to it remains nameless. There was no midwife then to bring us word of the birth cry. We only rejoice that it is. This is our earth. Ice caps its head. Glaciers clasp its feet. Warm wind, like the breath of a lover, breathes around its breast. Mountains thrust up to the clouds, bringing joy. Storms blow across its shores, bringing fear. Silvery fish capture sunlight and haul it down into the deep as onshore valleys spread with ripening fruit. Cities teem with the poor and disenfranchised in the shadow of golden towers. Children live and also die. Highways throb. Monks sit in silence. Mothers work. Crickets chirp. Teachers plan. Engineers design. Fathers write letters. People marry with and without the blessings of law. People cry. They laugh and brood and worry and wait. This is our earth. There are no other earths. Before its wonder, philosophers fall silent. Before its mystery, poets admit their words are shadow, not light. And all the great names religious teachers have left to us, Ishtar, Shekinah, Terra Mater, Suchness, Wakantanka, Gaia, suddenly refuse to announce themselves. And so we too fall silent, entering the time where words end and reality begins.
In the face of a changing climate that is getting us out of the balance in which civilization developed, we light this chalice for the children, women, and men who have already had to leave their homes, unable to live with waterlogged land, infiltrated with salt water, and inundated with rising seas. For the most vulnerable among us who can't catch a deep, full breath because of dirty air, who can't sip clean, safe water, who struggle to eke out a crop from dried out land. For all the world's people, for all the children and their children, for whom there is no safe haven if business as usual continues. We affirm the moral and ethical imperative to act in honoring the worth and dignity of every person and the interdependent web of existence. And we offer hope that together we can protect our common home for all.
I'm wondering if any of you know who Wangari Maathai was? Yes, Judy?
She's the woman who earned a degree, PhD in natural economics in Kenya, and she vowed to plant 1 million trees throughout Africa, and she's planted well more than that. She passed away, and her daughter carries on her work.
Oh, that's good. Her daughter carried on the work. She started out planting 7 trees, and they have got a lot of people to help, and there were 30 million trees. That's the last thing. She did the introduction to this story, Wisdom for All Ages. And I have to say thank you to some of our UU friends from the bigger UU land in Washington, D.C. and Boston, who, for the People's Climate March, they did street theater of this story, and Jan and I are the stream, and there's other things that we might think about doing at some other point. This is a story about a little hummingbird. The illustration is done by a man from the Haida Nation of the Pacific Southwest, and this is pretty typical of their kind of art. The hummingbird is found in North, Central, and South America, and for many peoples, the hummingbird is a sign of hope. And their stories, the catch-up people of Ecuador have a story about the hummingbird gathering clouds from the four corners of the earth so there could be rain or forest fires. So I think this, you'll see why this was such an important symbol for them. So the little hummingbird, dedicated to the indigenous peoples of East Africa, South Africa, America, and Botswana, and the northern Pacific Islands, you who have done so much for so long. Now, I know you're not going to be able to see pictures, but I will. I'll have a book after this if you want to look. Here's the story of the great forest that caught on fire. The terrible fire raged and burned. All of the animals were afraid and fled from their homes. The elephant and the tiger ran. The beavers scurried and the frog leapt away. Above them, the birds flew over them. The creatures huddled at the edge of the forest and watched. All except one. Little hummingbird did not abandon the forest. She flew as fast as she could to the stream. She picked up a single drop of water in her beak. Little hummingbird flew back and forth and back and forth and let the water fall onto the ferocious fire. She dashed to the stream and brought another drop, and she continued back and forth, back and forth. The other animals watched little hummingbird and they were frightened. Oh, what can I do? The fire was hot, I was scared. The fire is so big, I'm so small, cowled the wolf. I can't do anything about this fire, croaked the frog. The damsel bird, cried the owl. The fire continued. She flew quickly, picking up more water and putting it drop by drop. Big bear said, "Little hummingbird, what are you doing?" Little hummingbird looked at the other animals. She said, "I am doing what I can." So, yes, can you hear me?
Take your thing, make sure it's on.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm wrapping up.
Thank you. Thank you. So we will now collect the morning offering to continue the good work of this congregation. I liked the story of the little hummingbird for its illustration of how even a little one can do her part to address a huge problem. Yes, even when the big ones, the supposed masters of the forest, recoil in fear and stay stuck in inaction, beholden to the powers that be, and, well, to put a generous spin on it, the all-too-human fear of change. But I did hesitate to offer this story because, universal as it is, it's not an altogether up-to-date analogy for the rapidly changing climate if we think only of those things we do individually to walk more lightly on the earth. Many of us here take many steps to reduce our own greenhouse gas emissions that cause global warming and resultant climate change. 25 years ago, Bill McKibben, now of 350.org, says he thought individual actions would be enough to get the climate back in balance. Now, as he passionately points out, this is necessary and commendable, but no longer sufficient. We do need to envision a massive shift in consciousness to match the urgent scope of the existential threat to human civilization. If business as usual continues, we are on our way to a 4-degree centigrade world. The World Bank says that would, quote, likely be beyond our civilization's capacity to adapt. Our world could be full of chaos and confusion, like the forest fire. And we know that hunger, thirst, poverty, violence, forced migration are all made worse by climate change and affect the most vulnerable first. Naomi Klein said, quote, climate change is the human rights struggle of our time. It is way beyond just an environmental issue. The increasingly out of whack climate affects people. And the more the climate gets out of balance, the more imbalance there is in social justice and human rights. In regard to all the causes that we are so passionate about and work so hard to make a difference, UU Minister Reverend Jean Lloyd said, quote, the issues we fight become null and void if we have no clean water to drink, no clean air to breathe, and nothing to eat. Meeting our very basic needs gets pretty close to the bone when we think about survival and caring for our loved ones. I'll never forget the ending of the opera Dr. Atomic by John Adams. You might expect a great big spectacular bang when the bomb goes off over Hiroshima. But what you hear is a child's voice saying, water, mama, water. Just before Superstorm Sandy struck, the shelves in our local supermarket were empty of big jugs of water. We know that people in the United States and even more so around the world are struggling to have decent shelter, clean drinking water, and enough food to eat, all exacerbated by an out-of-balance climate. So the story of the little hummingbird needs a sequel. K. Can you envision Hummingbird Part 2? Maybe after this particular fire is put out, they all decide to regroup and put all their voices together, insisting to the powers that be that measures be taken now to reduce and eliminate the cause of wildfires in the first place. So while Part 1 continues as we mutually support one another in actions we can do at home and here in the meeting house, as we enlarge our frame for what is included in climate change advocacy, we are moving beyond our walls. We are working to strengthen our UU voice in the wider UU world, for example, encouraging the newly elected Unitarian Universalist Association president to speak out for climate change action. UUs have every reason, based on our values, to be leaders in calling for climate justice. Our common home, the phrase Pope Francis used in his climate change encyclical, sums up how we are all in this together. Locally, our climate change action team is represented on the Monmouth Community Climate Coalition, along with other faith-based, civic, and environmental organizations. Briefly, this organization was founded just before the UN climate talks in Paris to urge a just and equitable climate agreement. Since then, we have had four events with 80 to over 100 community guests attending. We are now working on approaching our townships for local actions, inviting you to consider being part of a small group in your own town. And we have Steve is here. Do you want to stand up? Steve's been working really hard on that. Thank you, Steve and Pat Miller. Thank you. Yes, Pat too. Thank you. And we have information on that at our table afterwards. I'm so glad that UUs are represented in this community endeavor. One of the coalition's events was in collaboration with Red Bank's Two River Theater, as they agreed to produce a play in the form of a mock trial called Mother Earth versus the World's People. This was written by a fellow UU from Santa Fe, Doug Stewart, who has given generous permission to produce the piece. In January 2017, the youth program of Two River Theater staged a reading of the mock trial in character. They did a great job to a standing room only audience. The audience had a role too, to be the jury in deciding if the world's people were guilty of hurting Mother Earth. The original play had about 12 characters showing harm to Mother Earth. Well, we couldn't keep everything in for the time allotted, so we conferred on how to present the play and make it short enough in this time. So along with Marian Wattenberger from AAUW, who's here, we made some revisions and updates. And I remember a meeting sitting around the table, and it went something like this. Jan, could you come and be a coalition rep? Okay. Well, looking at the play with the Two River Theater people, and I said, well, here's coral reefs. I know the scientists are very worried that they're getting all bleached out because of warmer waters, and they're not as beautiful as they once were, but maybe we could eliminate that section for this production.
But so many people depend on those reefs for their food every single day. 500 million people are directly supported by life sustained in the coral reefs. If they die, the food source dies. What would the people eat? Where would they go? Would they become climate refugees?
Wow, you're right. We need to point that out. Dying coral reefs are indeed a justice issue. Thank you. And so it went in our revision. Since then, I think I see more clearly about the people affected by even distant-sounding environmental changes, how climate change makes injustices even worse than they already are. One example, thinking about people who are already forced to move from their homes. Yes, we have American climate refugees, the Native Americans from Île Jean-Charles in Louisiana, forced out by encroaching seas and saltwater intrusion. Well, You probably know some fellow New Jerseyans and New Yorkers who were forced to vacate their homes because of the excess storm surge of Superstorm Sandy. And some people are still not back home, just like the families from Hurricane Katrina. So many examples happening now, and it will get worse with many more climate refugees. Some predictions are from 50 to 200 million by 2050. And we haven't even talked about all the people right now who are sickened by continued fossil fuel use, sometimes forced to move from their homes or stay stuck in a place with known toxins and carcinogens. John Donne's poem said, "Ask not for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee." None of us are exempt. When coastal homes are underwater and coastal Americans move inland, what kind of reception will they get? How will inland towns accommodate coastal refugees? How will we in the United States accommodate world refugees? Will Canada treat us the same way we are treating refugees from other countries right now? Home. What is home to each of us? I just heard an ad from a home security system that said, "Home isn't just a place, it's where you feel safe." The American Sign Language for home: eat, sleep. Very core to our beings. In her recent book about Louisianans dealing with pollution, asthma, cancer, and other health effects, Arlie Russell Hochschild reminds us that the word nostalgia has roots in nostros, return home, and algia, longing to return home. And the Spanish for longing to return home is mal de corazón, illness of the heart. Increasing millions of Earth's people will be suffering from mal de corazón even if they manage to survive. When we think of how much home means to each of us, how could we not stand up for everyone's home and the interdependent web of existence that is our common home? What a shift it would be in the forest if all the animals acted in solidarity. In all our various justice activities, we can make connections with climate change as a threat multiplier. And for those focusing on climate, let's continue to lift up and make linkages with human rights and justice. In his book, "What We're Fighting For Now Is Each Other," Wes Stevenson says, "What we're fighting for now is each other. We need to define our efforts inclusively enough to encompass everyone, not only certain communities, not only our own communities and our own children, but everyone, including generations not yet born, in order to keep even the possibility of justice alive on the earth." So we have an excerpt from the play. It is written in the form of a mock trial, and since Mother Earth is the plaintiff against the people of Earth, she does get a chance for her closing summation to the jury. So, Mother Earth. If it doesn't work, you can come over here.
It's okay. Thank you, Your Honor. Yes. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, distinguished guests, members of the press, as you know, I have been around for a long, long time. Mr. Defense Attorney is correct in saying that over these eons of time, I have had many changes from hot to cold and back again. What he neglected to remind you of, however, is that my temperature changes typically occurred over thousands of years, sometimes tens of thousands. But not this time, ladies and gentlemen, not this time. Since world people's industrial revolution, the amount of warmth-producing gases in my atmosphere has climbed to the highest level in almost 800,000 years. Consider that human civilization developed only about 10,000 years ago, when my temperature, although fluctuating, kept within the limits necessary for agriculture to develop and thrive. Then people could settle down, form villages and cities. We now find we are getting out of that balance. Global warming is not new. Your scientists have been alarmed by the rapid increase in greenhouse gases since your 1970s. Some warning even then of the grievous effects I am experiencing now. And a note, the so-called scientists that the defense attorney cites are either not real climate experts or they are ideologically driven to misrepresent true scientific analysis. Yet even knowing that I would be harmed, world's people and their elected leaders did not change their behaviors in any significant way to avoid damaging me. That, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, is why I am bringing charges. I will no longer tolerate it, and neither should you. As you well know, I am a very small planet in a vast universe. But I am also the only home that world's people have. There is nowhere else for them to go. Frankly, I can get along quite well without them. But they certainly cannot get along without me. As long as I receive energy from our sun, I can adapt to the changes world's people's global warming gases will cause me. But out of my affection for them, I must warn them that my methods of adapting may mean that world's people can no longer continue to live with me in the ways of civilization as they know it. If this is ever the case, I will, of course, miss them. In some ways, they've been fun, but in many ways, they have not been good to me, so I may not miss them for long. But listening to the testimony of the witnesses I've called, even I realize that we are in this together. What hurts me hurts you. All the Earth's people, especially the most vulnerable and those generations to come. And what of the world's people's children? I truly hope that in your deliberations today, you will consider the future stretching out before the world's children, including yours. With that sincere wish, I close with these words from your author, John Acheson. Our children may forgive us the debts we're passing on to them. They may forgive us if terrorism persists. They may forgive us for waging war instead of pursuing peace. They may even forgive us for squandering the opportunity to put the nuclear genie back in the bottle. But they will curse our names and spit on our bones if we pass on to them a world that is barely habitable, when it was within our power to prevent it. And they will be right to do so. Thank you for your respectful time and attention.
Please join in reading, responsive reading, 550. this we know. The earth does not belong to us. We belong to the earth.
This we know.
All things are connected like the blood which unites one family. All things are connected.
Whatever befalls the earth befalls the sons and daughters of the earth.
We did not weave the web of life. We are merely a strand in it.
Whatever we do to the web,
we do to ourselves.
The wood thrush is my favorite bird. Of the wood thrush's song, Henry David Thoreau wrote, "Whenever one hears it, he is young and nature is in her spring. Whenever he hears it, it's a new world and a free country, and the gates of heaven are open to him." Longtime avid birders such as I have noticed something very sad. We used to get up early in the morning and go out to hear the dawn chorus of birdsong. The fact is that the dawn chorus is much diminished from what it used to be. Particularly declining are the voices of migratory songbirds, and the wood thrush is one of those. Recently, the National Audubon Society reported that climate change is likely to so alter the bird populations of North America that about half of the approximately 600-plus species will be driven to smaller spaces or forced to find new places to live, feed, and breed over the course of this century. If they do not, and for some dozen, couple dozen, it will be very difficult, they could become extinct. With these kinds of findings, it's hard to believe we won't lose some species to extinction, said David Yarnold, president of National Audubon Society. How many, we honestly don't know. Although birds are resilient, climate change will test their limits. They need to adapt their migration arrivals to match changing spring budding time and the development of the insects they need for their food, and to cope with a new range of predators. O. Henry wrote, "We never miss the music till the sweet-voiced bird has flown." Now, it's a poem by Stephen Schick, a Unitarian minister. Here we go. "The winds of extinction sing a mournful song in the rustling grass, where the bobwhite drums and the meadowlark's melody is vanishing. The winds of extinction sing a mournful song in the dark forest shadows, where the boreal chickadee's voice is no longer heard, and the grosbeak serenades a coming hush. The winds of extinction sing a mournful song over the troubled waters, where the greater scaup quietly rests for the last time, and the harsh voice turns skydives to death. The winds of extinction sing a mournful song while we wait to find our voices to sing for their rebirth."
We can continue our time for prayer and meditation, a time for quiet, get comfortable, and feel the whole earth supporting you. I don't know how many tons the earth weighs, but it's really huge, and it's supporting you, us. As you do, take a deep breath, and as you breathe, each of the other 7+ billion people are also taking breaths, and they need air, food, clean water, shelter to live in harmony with the web of life. We're in this together. Welcome back.
to this room, this place, together now. So whatever your theology is, literal or metaphorical, this planet, this earth, was given to us. We were born into a context not of our own making. Reverend Michael Dowd, who has spoken here, points out that we are now co-creating, and we are called to stand for the future of how our life on Earth civilization will be. We know that human beings did not start our evolution in a paradisiac garden. Rather, we hunted and gathered. Each day was a survival test. Only when the climate finally settled down into pretty dependable stability could we settle into a garden where we could grow food, store it, stay in place, and move beyond that hard scrabble survival and deepen our understanding of our own power to create. Can we get back to the garden? Can the garden be a metaphor for a beloved community where we do all get along, appreciate and love each part of the web, and co-create a world anew where everybody can live in harmony?
What can we do? When we see the problem, we might think there is nothing each of us can do. One person, one voice, one vote. When we relook at the situation, we can see that the Earth's problems were created by people, towns, cities, and nations. So action to save our Earth should be people, towns, cities, and nations taking a different course. Let us be part of the solution. Take action at home to reduce energy use. Support organizations that want to protect our planet. Join others to show our resolve by demonstrating, marching, letter writing. Petition our leaders to change course. Become a leader. We can do this. We must. We can be optimistic, act with joy, and act with love. What can we do? When we see the problem, we might think there is nothing each of us can do. One person, one voice, one vote. When we relook at the situation, we can see that the Earth's problems were created by people, towns, cities, and nations. So action to save our Earth should be people, towns, cities, and nations taking a different course. Let us be part of the solution. Take action at home to reduce energy use. Support organizations that want to protect our planet. Join others to show our resolve by demonstrating, marching, letter writing. Petition our leaders to change course. Become a leader. We can do this. We must. We can be optimistic, act with joy, and act with love.